Hi, Spring fans. Welcome to a beautiful podcast. I'm your host, Spring Developer Advocate Josh Long, and this show is all about the real heroes behind Spring and its ecosystem.
Hi, Spring fans. I'm particularly excited about this week's show because we've got a very special guest, Sri Tumidi, a senior product manager working at the intersection of application security and platform at Pivotal. I really enjoyed chatting and getting the chance to chat with Sri because she is at the intersection of all sorts of different stuff related to how we secure applications on Pivotal Cloud Foundry and on Pivotal Kubernetes Service, PKS. And so it was really interesting to get her take on all sorts of different topics where these two different things converge, applications and platform. We spent time talking about security, Spring Security, OAuth support in general, OIDC and OIDC Connect, SAML, and of course the Cloud Foundry UAA, which I understand is short for User Account and Authentication Server. And we, of course, talked about tons more. So without further ado, please enjoy the show. Hi, Sri. How are you?
I'm doing good, Josh. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks for joining us today. I know you're super busy, and I know that getting on the same phone call has been more difficult than it needed to be. I'm so sorry for that.
No problem.
You've been super patient. Well, okay. So we have a lofty topic ahead of us. We have a lofty goal today. Do you want to introduce yourself? What do you do? You work at Pivotal?
Yes.
How are we lucky enough to have you?
Sure. I am currently at Pivotal. I've been with Pivotal for 4 years. And prior to joining Pivotal, I was with CA Technologies. My background is in enterprise security. And during my 14-year career in IT, I have worn many hats. I've been a tester, a developer, and then finally making the move to product management. But passionate about identity and security, and that was what actually led me to join Pivotal because I had never worked on open source before. So with CA, I was with them for around 10 years working on solving enterprise security challenges, but it was all proprietary. It was all closed source. And what was intriguing, obviously, about Pivotal was the openness and the Cloud Foundry Foundation and the ability to work on something that I loved, which was identity and security. So that's what brought me to Pivotal and has kept me at Pivotal.
To be clear, you're not just you're like a senior product manager with us, aren't you?
Actually, moved into a more managerial role as well. I'm senior manager of product management. So I do have a team of product managers working on security related aspects of the platform and apps.
Amazing. And those 10 years, for folks that don't know, CA, Computer Associates, you've probably dealt with some of their technologies. They deal with some of the biggest customers in the world, and they deal with most of them, right? So for to have somebody manage security or to care about security for that giant swath of customers, that's impressive.
Yeah. It was a great learning experience. A lot of insights there, and as you mentioned, lots of big banks, financial organizations, federal, and not just in America, but like all over the world. Yes, so yeah. a lot of presence from a security perspective and general IT products as well. But I was in the security business unit.
Absolutely, yeah, one of the hardest. So that's incredible. I'm glad you found your way to Pivotal. I'm glad you're still here. You know, the effort with security, I think you never get it right. You know, you're never done.
It's you work on it continuously, continuous improvement.
Right, it's very lofty, and you've got a team now that are working on this kind of stuff. That's great.
Yes. Yes.
So what is the main thrust of what you're doing today? Let's say in mid 2018.
Sure. So right now we are like our vision for security and for identity is that we want to make sure that we make it like a frictionless experience, and the core personas that we are focused on is operators and developers, and more so developers. And in doing that, right, like so In my purview, there is a UAA, which is an open source identity server under the foundation. And, you know, over the course of few years, we have added support for open standards. So we have added support for OpenID Connect, OAuth. We had support for SAML, but we have improved that now. And we are both an identity provider and a relying party. I'm going to talk about a lot of identity jargon here, but keep up with me. Hope you can keep up with me here.
When you say foundation, are you talking about the Cloud Foundry Foundation?
Yes, the Cloud Foundry Foundation.
Right.
You know, like staying up to date on standards has been, you know, like one of our main goals. And we recently applied for the OpenID Connect certification as well. So there is an OpenID Connect Foundation, and we are now a certified identity provider. So what that means is anyone who is a standard OpenID Connect relying party, like an application that is talking standard OpenID Connect relying party, can connect to us, and we have certified all the provider flows. So any standard libraries out there will work out of the box. And say, for example, Spring Security. In Spring Security, we are doing work in order to make it an OpenID Connect a relying party. And we have tested with UAA as well as with other providers like Okta.
Wow. Okay, so you're in the mix. UAA is also in the mix now. UAA is kind of an interesting project from my perspective. People may not know this, but our security support, our Spring Security support for OAuth,
yeah,
was driven by this need to have on the platform this UAA years ago, and we ended up bringing in a third party OAuth Spring Security project, unofficial Spring Security project. We ended up bringing that in and polishing it off, and so people like you know, the good Dr. Dave Sire and others since then.
So UA definitely has its beginnings in Spring, and Dave and a lot of other people on the Spring team contributed to it in the early days. And yes, it was initially created with the intent to solve the platform identity needs. And but you know, like once that was squared away, the next logical step was, hey, we need to do the same thing for applications and microservices running on the platform, and why not apply the same patterns there? All this is standards-based identity, and that's what led to, you know, like introducing more service-based architecture in UAA. So we introduced multi-tenancy, and we, as part of Pivotal, we launched the single sign-on service, which is based on the open service broker interface, and it provides a standard interface to app developers in order to make sure that they can embed standard identity patterns within their applications. So enabling single sign-on, using OpenID Connect, these kind of things are made possible.
Now, when you say enabling sign-on, does UAA, is that the ultimate store of identity management? Like, is that the ultimate identity provider? Does that store your usernames, your passwords, or do you integrate with things like Active Directory or other directory services?
So UAA does come with its own internal user store, but then that is not something that our enterprise users really want to leverage, because there is already a system of record like Active Directory. So yes, we do integrate with existing enterprise user stores via protocols like LDAP, so we can connect to Active Directory over LDAP. But then, you know, a more secure way to do that or accomplish that particular task is to use federation, and that's where protocols like SAML and OpenID Connect come into picture. So UAA supports LDAP connectivity to external user stores, mm-hmm, enterprise user stores, as well as SAML and OpenID Connect. So we have certified with Active Directory and with other federated identity providers like Ping, CA SiteMinder, and Okta, and a lot of other standard providers out there.
I see. So so those technologies, they provide the directory, if you will, the identity store, and then you can, through UAA,
connect to them.
You can connect to them and then provide a unified interface, be it via SAML or OpenID Connect and OAuth
or whatever. I mean, there's a number of different protocols that you can speak to other apps that want to consume it. So you act as a broker, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. And what is the, I mean, and this is all, right now we're talking about the Pivotal single sign-on service. That's a proprietary superset of the default behavior in UAA, right?
Yes, yes. So, yes, it is a proprietary service basically built with the intent to streamline enterprise identity and access management for PCF applications, so Pivotal Cloud Foundry applications. So it comes with an administrative dashboard, and it also comes with a developer dashboard wherein you can go and manage your applications and configurations. And we have kept, you know, like the sort of like the Spring enablement in mind. So when it comes to Spring microservices and Spring Boot applications, we have a connector. It's called a cloud connector, the single sign-on cloud connector. It does the last mile integration. So as a developer, you bind your application with the single sign-on service, and the connector is capable of taking those bind credentials, the credentials generated during the bind, and configure the application. So it's a very hands-off approach and experience for a developer. They don't have to write a lot of code to get enterprise identity.
That's sort of similar to the pattern that we take for the other, Pivotal brokers, the Breaker dashboard, the Eureka service registry, things like that.
Yes. So even Spring Cloud Services, they have a connector approach. Absolutely.
And so this, when you say connector, in this case, for our users, that's it boils down to a Spring Boot auto configuration that is able to unpack the particular credentials that are put into the environment by our single sign-on service broker, basically.
Yes, yes.
So you're putting a Spring Boot app into Cloud Foundry.
Yes, that's what it does. But then beyond that, you know, like beyond Spring applications, there is a host of other application types that run on the platform. So we have .NET applications, and there is the Steeltoe framework, and Steeltoe framework enables .NET microservices. And with Steeltoe framework, there is OAuth OpenID Connect support as well. So through Steeltoe, you can use and consume the SSO patterns.
Oh, wonderful. I didn't know that. Yeah. Steeltoe is getting very popular, I've noticed.
My goodness. It is. Yeah.
Who would have thought the second largest community would be very, very active, you know?
Yeah.
That's great. I knew Steeltoe had support for the other Spring Cloud services, but I didn't realize we already had such deep, SSO support.
SSO integration as well. Yeah. And wonderful. Our customers are using that. I mean, as you put it, right, like, I think .NET is definitely like the fastest growing community, you know, like on the platform. And we are seeing a lot of use cases and customer adoption around that.
Absolutely. I mean, it makes sense. We have world-class Windows and .NET support on the platform. Why wouldn't that follow?
Yeah.
That brings up another great point. We're not, you know, all these things I've just mentioned, I made the mistake of saying Cloud Foundry when really a lot of these things don't apply, strictly speaking, to just Cloud Foundry these days, do they? So how does that work for cross-pollination? We have PKS, for example. PAS is our platform built on Cloud Foundry, but nowadays we also have PKS.
And, sure. Yeah, would love to talk about the Kubernetes angle here. I mean, With something like Kubernetes, let's start with the open source side of things. So Kubernetes actually has a very extensible model for identity and as well as authorization. So Kubernetes can actually delegate its identity related aspects using OpenID Connect. So if you have an OpenID Connect identity provider, which Google is, so for example, Google is an OpenID Connect compliant identity provider, and so is UAA. And as I mentioned previously, we have applied for the OpenID Connect certification, and we got that just today, actually. So with Kubernetes, the way we are able to leverage existing identity patterns is by using UAA. So same thing applies to our proprietary offering, which is Pivotal Container Service, PKS. So what we are doing there is we are able to leverage UAA to secure the PKS control plane aspects. And there is work underway to use UAA to secure the Kubernetes API server and the command line interface. So there is the kubectl, I hope I'm pronouncing it right. So, or kubectl. So so kubectl and the kube API server, they can be hooked up to OpenID Connect identity provider, and we have tested this integration with UAA, and we've been able to you know, like, make sure that UAA tokens are acceptable to Kubernetes API server, and it's able to sort of validate and provide the right level of access to the identity in question. So that integration is there, and definitely with PKS we want to make sure that operators have a seamless experience when it comes to you know, doing this at scale and being able to bring their own enterprise identity providers. So a typical example could be, hey, I'm running PKS and I would like to hook up my users in Active Directory to be able to create clusters and manage clusters through PKS, but then I would like to use LDAP Active Directory integration for who gets access to the cluster. So that's where UAA comes into the picture. Through the OpenID Connect integration, we can leverage that particular, you know, like, OpenID Connect integration for that flow. And then beyond that, Kubernetes has a concept of a role-based access control. So in Kubernetes, there are different roles at different levels. So there is a cluster admin role. Kubernetes, there is tenancy through namespaces within the cluster. So there is a namespace admin role, and you can create custom roles as well. So the good thing about that is those roles can actually be derived from existing groups in Active Directory. So through UAA, we are able to pull those group informations, and then we can map those groups to Kubernetes roles. So that is how we are able to do RBAC, role-based access at scale, and bring in the enterprise identity context.
Wow. Okay, so it sounds like you've got your work cut out for you between two of the biggest platforms out there and all the apps that could run on those in different languages.
Yeah. So that is the platform angle. I wanted to introduce the audience to, like, another piece of technology, which is Istio, the service mesh in Kubernetes. So it makes, you know, like, the service mesh related capabilities, or it provides service mesh related capabilities with Kubernetes workloads. So we are planning to, you know, like, leverage Istio to a large degree as well with respect to our application security story. So in Istio, you know, with Istio, it provides, like, polyglot capabilities for service discovery, authentication, and all the other core capabilities. So we are looking at that as well. So in addition to Spring, we are also looking at Istio to extend some of the service mesh capabilities.
Wow. Okay. So okay, you're going to put security at the service mesh, and that'll be, so, wow. Let me think about this. You've got the service mesh. The service mesh is sat between different services in the cluster. The use case is I want to have security between the nodes, right?
Yep.
For intra-service communication. And you can do that generically now? Is that the goal, is to have that sort of a...
Yes, to a large degree. Yes, it is the genericity of that particular use case. So, and this is made possible through the sidecars. So, think of a sidecar as like an extension of your application framework, and the sidecar is implementing common patterns. So, one of those common patterns being security. And if you look at the Istio, and again, you know, like, how you can bring your own identity. Istio is also trying to use the same concepts as Kubernetes, making sure that you can tie in standards-based identity providers. So we actually did, like, a POC of, you know, like, using UAA tokens in the Istio service mesh, and we were able to do that. Like, initially we were not, but then, you know, we provided some feedback to the community, and we were able to fix some of the gaps there.
Awesome. Wow.
Crazy cool. So that's the work that we have to do to make this cohesive across these different projects is I don't think people appreciate just how many places there has to be care for this kind of thing. And this is an enterprise concern, you know. Our customers, they're not going to, you tell them use this technology, but we haven't figured out security, they laugh you out of the room.
Oh yeah, definitely. And then beyond that, we have PKS, PAS. So PAS is the cloud native abstraction. Then we have PKS for containers, and then finally we have the Pivotal Function Service and the Riff project that has kicked off in the Spring community. So PFS is something that I would say that we are in very, very early stages at least. But the good thing there is that PFS is also going to rely on the Kubernetes stack. So everything that we are doing with Kubernetes and identity will be applicable there. So being able to bring in the standards-based identity to PFS, we are going to leverage our work with Kubernetes and UAA integration and using that for functions, both from an operational, like an operational control plane security angle, as well as securing the functions itself.
Right. And the functions here in PFS, as you know, is it's a multi-language effort. So you have to make this work across, just like with Cloud Foundry, you have to make these things work generically across all these different runtimes.
Yes. So given that, and you know, like that, the fact that we have these multiple abstractions, one thing that we have identified, or the main thing that we've identified, is there is a need for like a shared service, a shared security plane, which can cut across, you know, like these abstractions and provide, a common interface to the operators, as well as a common interface to the developers, no matter what abstraction they are using. And that's where we are trying to focus our efforts on right now.
Are the majority of applications that you see across these different runtimes, you mentioned OpenID Connect, for example, is that now the prevailing standard across the cloud natives, or I know we have SAML support, for example.
Great question. Actually, it's a really great question, because OpenID Connect is definitely the prevailing standard, and there is a reason for it, and the reason is that it is making use of the latest and greatest in terms of, you know, like the token standards and use of JWT and being opinionated about what the token format should be and the use of the REST patterns. If you look back at something like SAML. Not to trash talk SAML, but then it SAML had a role to play, and it's still widely used in enterprises, because enterprises, for what it's worth, they move slowly. Exactly, you know, just like risk aversion there. So enterprises definitely are using a lot of SAML and core LDAP capabilities. But, you know, like with enterprises, what we have to understand is like they don't make everything a cloud workload, right? So you're operating in a hybrid scenario. So mm-hmm. you have you know, like some workloads which are running off the platform. They could be running in some private clouds, or they could be running like on premise in some kind of a contained as some kind of a contained platform. So interop is really important, and that's what we have identified. So you could still have certain applications and APIs which will require SAML tokens. But you want to move to the future standards as well. So if you put applications in the cloud, you want to use the latest and greatest standard. And we are making sure that we are providing you all the capabilities to make that adoption a frictionless experience. But it's still, the interop requires us to understand SAML. Right. So like if an application which is sitting in the cloud needs to talk to an application which can only understand SAML, we should be able to support that kind of a use case. And that's where we still have to support the older standards. So we are not getting away from it, because we operate in a complex environment where not everything is one protocol.
Yeah, we see that. I certainly see that from the Spring perspective. I see that, and I'm sure you work on the Spring team, you see it as well.
Yeah.
You know, our work has been on Spring Security OAuth, for example, on the OpenID Connect stuff, whereas our Spring Security SAML, while it exists, I don't really see a lot of that out there, you know, from the usage patterns perspective from the client. Now, OpenID, I think, is worth spending a minute on, just in general, just the basic idea. I learned years ago, I learned OAuth, and OAuth has this idea of it's an identity delegation technology. It really OAuth handles authorization, not authentication, right? You delegate to something else, you delegate to, well, whatever. You delegate to UA, you delegate to, you know, Okta, whatever. And then that in turn establishes with your OAuth authorization server that you are who you say you are. And then that returns flow control back to the authorization server, which then is now charged with managing the token, basically. Token it manages access to that token. And then other clients that want to act on your behalf check with the authorization server about the veracity of that token. That's regular OAuth. In order for the client to know what to do, to know who this person is, the client needs to check it needs to exchange that token for some sort of identity, right? Some sort of information. And that information wasn't standard, right? That endpoint there wasn't standard. For example, for OAuth, it would be, you know, for GitHub, it might be different from Facebook, right? And then at some point people said, well, there's a couple of problems with that. First of all, we have people constantly going back and forth between the client and the authorization server. And then second of all, the information that they get isn't standard. There's no consistent format for that. So OpenID, I think, solves both those problems, because now you have the ability to have JOT tokens, which themselves contain everything you need, which cuts down on the round trips. And you have a standardized format. That's also the JOT claims, basically.
Right. Absolutely. So OpenID Connect is, more opinionated about what you get back in those claims. And in very simple terms, OpenID Connect is an identity layer on top of OAuth. So when OAuth came into existence, it was mainly for delegated authorization, wherein when you have a user who is acting through an application, but it is still user's resources in question. So user is the owner of those resources, but the application needs to access those on the user's behalf. So that's where OAuth came into picture, because now through OAuth flow, a user could provide limited access to the application in order to access their resources, like photographs on the internet, for example, or posting on the Facebook wall.
So the ever important cat picture.
Exactly. So definitely OAuth plays more in the authorization space. It has a big role to play when it comes to, you know, like authorization of microservices, for example. And with OAuth, it's not just users. With microservices, you know, like you are trying to secure a microservice to microservice interaction as well, while keeping the identity context. So OAuth helps in those scenarios a lot. But what OpenID Connect has really done is, it is actually, you know, like if people are, they understand SAML, which very few people do, I think, but it is a replacement for SAML. Because what SAML was doing was it asserts on identities. Right? Like, hey, this is Josh. He's from Pivotal. He's in these groups, and these are his attributes, like location and job title and whatnot. So OpenID Connect is doing the same thing, but the assertion is a JOT. It is a JSON web token, which is signed and optionally encrypted, right? So think of it as the next gen SAML. And so anywhere you see SAML, hopefully we will move to a world eventually where it's all OpenID Connect, and this whole, you know, like translation is not needed.
Right. Yeah. One hopes. But it's nice that we're able to bridge these gaps with one technology toolkit, one frame of mind, you know, for both worlds. Because there's going to be, you know how it is. There's going to be apps from yesteryear that are working just fine, and retrofitting them to take advantage of OpenID Connect, interesting how that might be, isn't a priority.
Exactly, and we see that all the time with our customers. You know, like there is always greenfield applications that you want to make sure that they are using the latest and greatest when it comes to the technology stack. But there are applications that, you know, like had their mileage, you know, had their day in the sun, and you do not want to invest them in them any further. But they are there. You know, like they need to stay there, and they need to serve a population of users, and you don't want to spend any more money or effort on rewriting them. So yeah.
And that's I think that's a one of the things where we at Pivotal have a very good, we have a good position, a good vantage point, a good you know, a big advantage.
Yes,
because so we have apps that are sat in both worlds.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, you know, with something like PKS, we have provided the ability to even get the cloud benefits for apps that you do not want to rewrite. So, you know, like you could package them up and you could run them in PKS with like minimal change, as opposed to writing a 12-factor application or a cloud native application, which is Spring Boot or using the latest and greatest of the tech stack, right? So PKS is making that a possibility as well. So PKS is an option for, you know, like workloads which do not necessarily fit in cloud native 12-factor bucket.
Yeah, it's forklifting. You know, it's easy to poo-poo it. But I wrote a blog a few years ago, and actually, you know, I think if I were to do an update to that blog, maybe you and I could write something together, because the blog was all about how to forklift apps right onto the platform, because that's a thing. We didn't have Kubernetes at the time, so there was no good failure.
Sure. Yeah. Now we have PKS, so yeah, right. Definitely we can revisit that.
But I think even if we talked about forklift, I think you could do a whole other installment. You know, the blog was like 10 pages. It was huge. It was, you know, massive blog. We could do another one just on security. You know, migrating. Sure. Sort of enterprise-y security patterns to this new world. And that's the nice thing is the OpenID Connect stuff, the OAuth stuff, that's not just, I mean, I think a lot of people first heard about it from the big internet darlings because of the use cases. You've got these service-based websites, these Stack Overflows, the Googles, the whatever. Although I note that Stack Overflow just dropped their endorsement. Was that for OpenID?
I have not followed that. Did they? Did they drop their endorsement or support?
Yeah, Stack Overflow, OpenID. I could be wrong about this.
Okay.
I think, yeah, look at that. Yeah, so it ended July 1.
Interesting.
Well, I think that's okay. I mean, they moved to a different use case. A lot of websites still are interested in that use case, and they want a canonical identity. You know, and that's certainly a good use case for OpenID. And if you have that use case,
I have a feeling that it is the old version. There used to be just OpenID and there's OpenID Connect. I have a feeling that they're moving from the original OpenID to OpenID Connect, which Google and UAA and others vendors support. There is a precursor to OpenID Connect actually, which is just OpenID. Yeah, and I think they probably dropped support for the older one.
I didn't know that. Okay, there you go. So that's if you see discerning, if you see a potentially disturbing headline saying OpenID is being not the same thing.
Yeah, I hope not. We just certified that. So
Oh goodness. And that's I see that too. I see OpenID Connect everywhere. OIDC is what you might also alternatively see it referenced as on the internet. But anyway, the point is, I see people, large websites, Google and other large websites, rallying around OpenID Connect, and it's now become, it's no longer just the internet darlings. It's no longer just these websites that have multi-tenancy into the platform, like Facebook and so on. It's now the enterprise, you know, and
it is.
Increasingly, I see that, you know, you see the convergence of the enterprise versus the internet darlings. I think they're the same companies in a lot of places now. You know, they're the same thing in a lot of places, but that's because of technologies like this.
Yeah. I mean, I think the what it has, you know, like led to is definitely these technologies have been, you know, like tested at scale, the adoption at scale, and enterprises want the same thing. They want that kind of consumer scale, but security at the same time. And that's why you see that kind of adoption. And, you know, when someone like Google is behind it, then everyone's excited.
Yeah. And I think we've, well, first of all, the enterprises have moved, I think, in some respects, a little slower than these internet darlings, because the things that they needed to do weren't supported in the more sort of cloud-native world where everything is a web service, right?
Yes.
Things start to, as we start to see things like OpenID Connect that bridge that gap, you start to see acceleration in the enterprise. They don't want to go slow. They just are kind of hamstrung by lack of reasonable options.
Sure. Yeah, and these have advanced over time as well. I mean, you look at the different profiles in OpenID Connect. Like, we actually, one thing I did not mention was OpenID Connect has a session management profile as well, which we implemented. So we did a client side JavaScript library. It's called Singular, and we implemented the OpenID Connect session management spec. So what that does is, if you have one or more applications and you're using an OpenID Connect identity provider like UAA, then if you sign out of one application, you will automatically get signed out of all the applications. So we did that spec as well, and the enterprises need that kind of a thing. And but that was over time. It was not there, you know, like a few years back. Like, it's been a natural sort of progression.
Wow. And the other thing is, I remember specifically OAuth 2. One of the big brouhahas around the debut of OAuth 2 was that it would, you know, sorry to go back to this point. I remember OAuth 2 had support for SAML. So it's interesting that we chose to go to OpenID Connect despite that.
Yes. And I think it obviously was mainly, you know, like, for the reasons that if you look at the SAML spec and the complexity around, you know, like XML and the handling of the handling of the metadata and stuff, it's just hard, you know, like, both from an implementation standpoint as well as from a setup standpoint. And you look at, like, the latest right now, everything is REST and everything is JSON. It's lightweight, and so identity protocols also wanted to leverage that aspect.
And I think, yeah, you say everything is light, but it's only light if the scaffolding required to support it is light.
Absolutely.
So if you're reinventing security every single time you deploy a REST API, well, you're not going to do it very often, are you? You're not going to deploy new APIs.
But
if it's now just a matter of, like, add this connector and something you plug into the organizational standard, that's very powerful.
It is.
And that, when we talk about REST APIs, you do think of, you know, most of us think about quote unquote stateless REST APIs, but Rob Winch, Spring Security Lead Rob Winch, likes to talk about how that's not, in all fairness, that's not true, right? There's always security. There's a security context.
There is always security. Yes.
Right? Yes. And it's stateful, not totally stateless. It's not very good.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But the good thing is, I'm sorry.
Session management thing.
Yeah, so the session management thing is basically the application, right? Like, when it receives an identity token, the OpenID Connect ID token, it has a lifetime, but there is a stateless nature to it, right? Like, hey, I asserted on an identity, good. But enterprises want some statefulness. Like, okay, I use the identity provider to sign into, like, five different applications. If I sign out of one application, I would like to be signed out of all the applications. Now, if you keep the statelessness in mind, you cannot achieve that. So that's where, like, there is a RFC for OpenID Connect session management, wherein there is a concept of a session with the identity provider, which you keep track of, every application keeps track of. And if you log out of one application, the other applications are polling essentially the identity provider, but in a very sort of, like, non-intrusive manner. There is support for that in HTML5. It's called post message. So other applications, through that constant polling, will know that the application there is one application that logged out, and the IDP, the identity provider session, has been logged out. So other applications will immediately clean up their session as well. So it's it's a single logout feature. SAML also supports it. It's called the SAML SLO profile, the single logout profile. So you achieve that with OpenID Connect through that RFC.
And so does this singular JavaScript library run in the browser then? Is that the idea?
Yes, it runs in the browser. Yeah. I see.
And of course, if you're using a Node or something like that, I suppose it could run on the server side as well.
Yeah, it's a Node. It's NPM packaged, and you can easily add that into as a dependency in your client side.
I'm looking at it too. The API is really straightforward. You don't need anything particularly. You could use jQuery or something. You know, you could just any application that has JavaScript would work just fine with this.
Yes.
Singular.init. So it couldn't be simpler. Oh wow, very cool. Look at that. I didn't know about that. That's You've even got callbacks here in the client-side library where you can actually on identity change and on logout.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that is super cool. Wow. I might have to ping you later and see if I can get this set up into my code. That's one of those use cases where, you know, even in the Spring security side, we've struggled over the years to sort of, address that in a concrete way consistently and correctly, because the definition of logout is not, it's not constant, you know?
Yeah, it's not. It's hard. And actually, some applications don't want that. They don't want a single logout behavior. They still want to be logged in for what it's worth, because they are in possession of a token that is still valid. So yeah. In some cases, they don't want it. In some cases, for security reasons, they do.
You know, it wouldn't be so hard to build a similar thing that does this in Java code. So basically, it'd be a thing that ran in Spring Boot that pulled the endpoint and then published an application context event. Interesting.
Yep.
Oh, there's a lot of I didn't know this was here, let alone how easy it was. So
let me put it this way, Josh. I don't think we have done a good job at marketing a lot of the UAA updates. I think we need to get better at that.
Well, I hopefully this podcast helps with some of that. I'm certainly impressed. This is crazy cool. Look at that. Oh
yeah.
My, so is that's already in UAA? That's in the base open source UAA distribution?
Yes, it is. It is. It is completely open source.
So actually, can you distinguish for our audience what of all the amazing things we've talked about today isn't in the base UAA stuff? Is the SAML support there?
Everything is there. The only thing that is Pivotal proprietary is the single sign-on service. So the single sign-on service is essentially a service broker, and it has an administrative dashboard. So that is the part which is closed source. Even the connector is open source, actually. So the broker aspect is proprietary, but everything else, like UAA, it's client-side libraries, including Singular, and we also have a UAA Java library, so that's part of the CF Java client. So all of that is open source.
Amazing. Oh yeah. Okay. So you integrate with the Java client, the Cloud Foundry Java client library run by Ben Hale.
Yes. Yes. So it has full support for the entirety of the UAA API.
I see. Interesting. Very, very cool. And now, people who are not running on Cloud Foundry, just to be very clear, you can totally run UAA.
Standalone.
Standalone by yourself. It doesn't have to be on the cloud even. You can just run it on local.
Absolutely. Yeah, it spins up like a Tomcat, and it's running within that container. And you can easily sort of like get everything running locally.
Interesting. Look at all this cool stuff. I have... Wow. Okay. Very, very, very cool. Do you see people using other? So we use UAA for our identity management within the platform for the components, as well as the application concerns that want to integrate with the platform. So our partners, for example, when they ship a tile, they're encouraged to make that thing work with our identity management system based on UAA. Is that true?
That is true. And actually, beyond that, also, we UAA is used by some of the big foundation members. So we have SAP and GE, both have their own platform. So SAP has the HANA cloud platform and GE with the Predix platform. Mm-hmm. UAA is being used as a service in both of them. And SAP and GE have been like big contributors to UAA in the open source. So they have contributed engineers who have paired with the UAA team as part of the Dojo program, and they have contributed to UAA, and they have UAA running at scale, essentially generating thousands and thousands of tokens per minute. And Yeah. Crazy. So at scale on the open source side. They have I was trying to get this information from GE. They have close to, I believe, 20 instances of UAA with Predix.
Does UAA, the service itself is stateless, but it talks to a database, right? And that is that MySQL or what is it these days?
We have support for Postgres, MySQL, and we recently added support for SQL Server.
Oh, wow. Okay. So very, if you don't have one of those, you're probably not out there, you know?
Yeah.
Anybody can run one of those. Now, and you just mentioned SAP and GE. And,
yes.
So between those two and Pivotal, my goodness, that's every large enterprise out there. It's probably
every large enterprise out there, definitely. Mm-hmm. And to give an example, like on the Pivotal side, we have customers ranging, you know, like from government to financial organizations to big retails and insurance. And we UAA is running in all those verticals.
Yeah, I mean, just to close on that, I mean, what we are seeing is the fact that, you know, UAA is being used at that kind of a scale, like that kind of an enterprise scale, has led to like a lot of optimizations from an operator angle as well. So we have added, you know, like support for key rotation, for example, and we have added support for secret rotation. We want to make sure that, you know, like customers, like operators are able to do something like that without taking any downtime for the application or for the platform. We added other enterprise features like backup and recovery. So, you know, you have a disaster recovery site and you want to make sure that you're taking periodic backups of UAA, and you can do all of that in a very seamless, you know, productized manner. Like there is no need to write any elaborate scripts and stuff. So those are the kind of things, you know, like that we've been able to add support for in UAA, keeping in mind that that is the kind of customer base that we have to support.
When I think of UAA, I think of the application concerns. I think of OpenID Connect. That's an application concern. What is now our story? People might have heard of, for example, and you mentioned key rotation. People might have heard of CredHub. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. Sure. So CredHub is something that we introduced as part of the Cloud Foundry Foundation to basically perform credential management in a standardized manner. So, and it is not just for platform credentials. So, you know, with Cloud Foundry, there is a host of platform credentials and certificates that need generating and rotation. And CredHub is trying to perform those activities in a standard way. And it is going to, it supports HSM integration as well to a hardware security module. So we, like with Cloud Foundry, our security strategy has been the 3 R's, and so it is rotate, repave, and repair. And the rotate strategy is being able to perform credential rotation. So CredHub has now been introduced into Cloud Foundry, and it is able to make sure that all of the platform related credentials, like with Cloud Foundry, Bosch, and all the other sort of like OAuth clients and all the other secret and certificate material can be generated through CredHub and stored in CredHub. But then beyond that, we have services, say, for example, the Spring Cloud services, which has a bunch of credentials that it needs for its control plane functioning. Those are also being integrated into CredHub. And we have a running story for making sure that services that are dealing with credentials can integrate with CredHub. So even something like the single sign-on service, which is generating OAuth clients, those secrets can be stored in CredHub and can be rotated seamlessly there. And Pivotal is going to come out with a CredHub for applications. So if you are an application developer, you are pushing an application to the platform, that application needs credentials and needs to use them in a secure manner, then you can do a CredHub. You can leverage the CredHub for apps service.
You can do encrypted values in the property files, for example, but I know a lot of people have clamored for something where it's a dedicated store and that you can share across the platform components as well.
Yes. And that's where
Spring Cloud,
CredHub can help.
CredHub, yeah. Right? That's actually a project out there. You can go use it now. That provides the auto configurations and the client to talk to CredHub. And CredHub, interestingly, that's a Java project, yeah. isn't it? That's actually...
Yes.
Yeah,
it is a Java project, and the main reason is that as with everything yeah. else, all of the security related constructs and the tooling is the best in Java.
Makes and, sense. Yeah, I was just gonna say. I was thinking about
to go with that.
Open source identity providers. You know, there's a number of options in this very crowded field. You've heard of, I'm sure, Red Hat's Keycloak, and Okta itself, and.
Yes, I have.
Okta bought up a company called Stormpath, whose implementation was also in Java in Spring. So it seems like the people that care about this stuff care about it in Java.
Yes. They do, and I think the common thread there is Spring, because the fact that it is so prevalent in the developer community, everyone, including like Auth0 and Okta and all the other big players, they want to make sure that they have a Spring integration.
Actually, that's a good point. We should do more blogs about how UA can be used with Spring just by itself. You know.
Yes. I think we are lacking there in terms of, as I said, our marketing efforts have not been that great.
I think. Auth0 and Okta both have whole developer advocacy teams dedicated to highlighting the Spring story on their respective technologies. Same with Keycloak, actually, with Red Hat. So with us, people, you know, we do so much at Pivotal, and I think people forget that there's this. We have a whole team dedicated to security, and that's one of the things you have to do yourself if you decide to forego this higher level application concern, this higher level application platform approach, and you decide to build from whole cloth, your own platform. You're going to have to duplicate that work. You're going to have to make these, the three R's. That's not something that most of these primitives support natively. You know.
No, they don't. And in my experience, actually, I've seen that, you know, like a lot of big customers, in the absence of, you know, like having a standards-based identity server, they start building their own patterns. And that's not good, because, you know, like you do this as sort of like a pet project, but then when it has to be run at scale, that's when all the concerns come into play. And it's very hard to take something like that and, you know, like keep it and maintain it.
This is not good. I made a mistake. I mean, I make lots of mistakes, but one of the worst performances I've ever given, and I don't think anybody held it against me, but one of the worst performances I've ever given on a stage was I went to go to Maryland? Just outside of Washington, D.C., basically. And I'm talking to people at a sort of an industry security conference. And of course, this is right by Washington, D.C., so there are lots of government, spooks, you know, like security people from the NSA, people from these companies there. And like an idiot, more an idiot than usual, went into, you know, tape cassette mode. I just hit play and I started giving my talk, right? I was a little tired. And I got to the line in the talk at the time. This is like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 2011-ish. And at that point, I got to the line in the talk where I extol that people shouldn't reinvent the wheel. That Spring's one of the Spring strengths is that we have this rich catalog of things that you can use to solve problems, and we have expertise in those particular those domains, right? And one of the areas where we have expertise is in security. Spring security has been around for forever, you know, 15 odd years. It's been around forever. It's been used by the majority of Java developers, and they are in turn the majority, or the plurality at least, of developers out there. So by extension, Spring security is, I think, reasonably the most pervasive security technology for developers in the world. And I got to that point in the line, and I said, you shouldn't reinvent security. This is not something you're going to get right. And then I realized that the people that were staring at me in the room were statistically the people who reinvented security and had every right to do so, right? These are the people who are deciding the algorithm for encryption and all that stuff. So that was a little awkward. Like, I found the one group that they can afford to do it. The rest of us, no, we don't get to do that.
We don't get to do that.
It's so tempting. I mean, we've all done it, you know?
Yeah. I think it's basically something like, hey, you know, I need to get this out. I need to add this aspect of security. Right. Let me just get this into my application and get it out, right? Like it's always about timelines. And I think that's what happens. But that's what we are trying to solve as part of, you know, like something like Cloud Foundry. Like, you know, all these controls are there for you. You just need to turn them on in a declarative way. There is no need to write a lot of code, like through Spring Framework, through Spring Boot, and through all the constructs that you get from the platform and all the different features and functionalities that you get from the platform. It's just like, you know, you just put the pieces together without a lot of effort. And
I think as you move to microservices, that message will be easier to digest, because you see people start decomposing their domain, and so they have these things that can stand unto themselves. Well, if you look at let's say you're in the business of selling flowers or something online, or you're selling, you're doing your hotel and travel website or whatever your business domain is, you have this cross-cutting thing that isn't particular to the domain of what you're trying to do, which is the users in the system, right? The, you know, who's using the system. And so we all start with an ERD diagram, I'm sure, of, you know, here's the user table and here's the, you know, products table and whatever. And of course you've got pointers from those tables to the user table. And a natural place to start decomposing is to extract out that user. Well, instead of writing that microservice yourself, instead of creating a microservice that does user management, just talk to something like UA, you know, talk to the single sign-on service. That doesn't have to, that's a great example of a microservice architecture done right, where you have these loose keys in your entities, in your tables, you have these loose relationships or links, but they're not actually binding, you know, they're not, you don't need, I don't have to change Google's architecture to use their OAuth provider. I don't have to change UAA to be able to use it. And yet my service can continue to work.
Yeah. Sure. And it's portable as well. Like you take it through environments and there is no need to change anything within your application.
Hopefully we'll see more people embrace this architecture. Wow. Yeah. We have covered, feels like we've just begun. I feel like we've only just begun to scratch the surface, and there's a lot we could have talked about. Do you have anything you want the users to know about? What they must absolutely try out?
I would say that try out UAA in the open source. There have been a lot of cool features added lately. Apart from the OpenID Connect certification, we have added something called as the Google Authenticator Multifactor support. So everyone, I think, would be familiar with how you can use Google Authenticator to generate codes. So we are able to leverage that within UAA. So if you have an application, you want to enable multifactor for that application, you can use UAA in that flow. So do try that out. And then beyond that, we are continuing to, you know, like close the gap between us and Kubernetes. So look out for, you know, like more information around how UAA can be leveraged within the Kubernetes ecosystem, and, you know, the work that we will do within the Pivotal function space, both in the open source as well as on the proprietary side. I would say that, you know, for us, the future is being more relevant in not just the foundation, but in the other communities as well. So obviously Spring, and then beyond that, in the Kubernetes space, in the Istio space, and making sure that UAA can be used to solve those standards-based IAM challenges in those different places.
Awesome. How can people reach you? Are you on the Twitters? Are you out there? Or are you, a secured secret?
No. I'm very much on Twitter. So you can follow me at Sreetumidi. So that's Sreetumidi. And on GitHub, but my dev days are behind me. I've not been writing a lot of code. So I think the best way to catch up with me is on Twitter.
Well, okay. I really appreciate your time today. I know that, every single time, every minute I waste with you, learning all this great stuff, is somebody's system being compromised or something like that. Maybe, you should maybe, I don't think it's quite that direct, but I feel bad taking somebody so important as you, away from what you're doing.
Oh my God. No. Thank you so much for having me, on this podcast, and, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bootiful Podcast was produced by me, Josh Long. Music for this episode was sampled from Steve Combs' Theme from A Morning in Springtime and Steve Combs' Small Victory, both licensed under the Creative Commons license. No harm came to any seasons in the making of this podcast. I do these podcasts because I believe that everything we do in software is for and made better by people. I want to hear from you. I'm Josh at joshlong.com by email, or at StarbucksMan, StarbucksMan on Twitter, where my DMs are wide open. Have guest ideas, topic suggestions? Don't hesitate to reach out. As always, Spring fans, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.